If it's not too much to ask, can I get myself a DECA?
Yeah.
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 Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. That's what I'm talking about. That's what I'm looking for. Welcome to the Friday edition of The Jungle. My name is Jim Rome. The program is brought to you by Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Rocket Mortgage is with you every step of the way to provide a seamless mortgage experience. Yeah. What's going on? Good to be here. Good Friday show for you. I'm always hyped up on Friday. We have a lot of fun, got a lot of content, lots to get to. Don't waste time. Hit me up right now. The first interview today is not until 9:40 Pacific, 12:40 Eastern, meaning you've got the better part of 40 minutes to get through. The staff, the XR4TI is intact, meaning Alvy is back. They're all back to where they should be. Reading from my left to my right, Alvin DeLauro. What's up, Alvin? Thank you for coming to work today, Alvin. Next to Alvin, Hawk. Behind Hawk, the old man, Ike.
Finally.
And me, your host, Jim Rome. All right, so the show sets up like this. Coming up at 40 past, we're talking BYU football. This is a big BYU house. The head coach at BYU, Kalani Sitake. That's coming up at 9:40. Here's somebody we have not run down for a while. Malcolm Butler, Tennessee Titans corner, joins me at 10:40. It's Friday, one of the most anticipated segments of the week. Well, Alvy's week there was. But before that, Big Head Bets, starring James Kelly. We are checking out some of the action over the weekend, so we will find a way to get down, hopefully get paid. James Kelly and Big Head Bets coming up at 11:20. Alvy's week that was, the ATP. I want to remind you to go to Clinton Portis, episode 155 of the Jim Rome podcast. All right, so that's how it's setting up. Let's get it. It's Friday. Chargers 17, Raiders 10. That was the halftime score last night. And as good as Charger fans might have been feeling at that point, I hate to say it, but they knew how it was going to go. This is me talking to you, Charger fan. I know you. You know me. You know that I know you. And I know how you were feeling and thinking last night. In other words, there was no way that game was going to end any other way but horribly for the Chargers. That's just how it is, and that's just how it's been for a number of years now. You get close, and then somehow somebody finds a new and difficult way not to win. You know, walk around right into the jaws of victory, look around, and somehow snatch defeat yet again. This is how it's been for quite some time. For instance, 7 one-score losses. Seven. And not in the past 7 years, but this year, in 14 games, they have lost 7 times by a single score. The odds of that are staggering, if not outright impossible. It didn't matter that Las Vegas lost Derek Carr when he exploded his groin. It didn't matter that Justin Herbert had tied the rookie record for TD passes right before halftime. You know Charger fan was still expecting and preparing for the worst. We all were, because none of that matters. So of course, when the Raiders come out to start the second half, of course they go on a 10-play, 76-yard touchdown drive on their first possession. Of course that would be capped off by this from Josh Jacobs to tie the game up.
Here's the snap. Mariota back, handoff, Jacobs straight ahead, goes airborne and flips into the end zone for a Raider touchdown. Josh Jacobs leaving his feet, goes over the pile for his 10th touchdown run of the season, and the Raiders are within one with 7:18 to go in the third quarter.
I like that bed, Alvy. Westwood won. So at that point, you know, Charger fan is thinking, man, it is over. It's just a matter of what that final score is going to be and how we're going to get jacked up in the end. The fact that Justin Herbert led them to a TD drive to take the lead again was not a good thing. It was only going to make it that much worse. It was only going to make the eventual, the inevitable, even more painful when it really did happen. And if you needed any proof that it was going to be a painful night for the Chargers, you didn't need to look any further than the Raiders going on that 5 million play drive that started in the third and ate up most of the fourth. I don't want to belabor the point, but come on, Charger fan. You knew how this was going to go. The Raiders playing with a backup quarterback go on a soul-snatching drive where they grind it out, they spin clock, and then they score. It's so brutal. That's the kind of thing that shatters a team. Except that team, that's who that team is. That's what they do. That's where they live. That's who they are. There were four third downs on that drive. There were two fourth downs on that drive. The Chargers could not get the hell off the field. So it was not a shock when Vegas finished it off with this.
Mariota takes the snap, back to throw, looks left, now looks right, runs to his right. Mariota trying to run, dives for the end zone. He is in. Touchdown, Raiders. Marcus Mariota with the touchdown run, leaving his feet, extending the ball over the plane of the goal line. And with 6:16 to go, the Mariota touchdown run has brought the Raiders within one.
And then they tied it, 24-24. Charger fan knew the deal. They knew what was up. And their fears were partially confirmed when the Money Badger missed from 47. Then the Chargers, in true Charger style, get an INT from jungle legend Chris Harris Jr. He comes through with the pick, takes it all the way down to the Vegas 33. It put the Chargers in position for the win. But really, it put them in position for this.
His nickname there was the Money Badger. He's trying to be money right here for the Chargers. From 51 for the lead. Here's the snap. The ball is down. Badgley's kick is up. It's hooking again. It is no good. He hooked it wide left for a second straight time. And now the Raiders, with 51 seconds left, will have a chance to go down and win it and keep their season alive.
Right. Cue yakety. I mean, if that were a rough look for the kicker, the Raiders were about to go one better, sending out the kicking unit for a field goal attempt that would have made Lane Kiffin proud.
Carlson is going to try for an NFL record 65-yarder. I thought they might give Cole a chance. This is way beyond. And now back is Campbell. Here is a snap that gets away. And Cole ends up covering up, and there are zeros on the clock. Not pretty.
Look, I know there's allegedly no such thing as bad sex, bad pizza, or bad football, but the last few minutes of regulation were bad, really bad, comically bad, clown show-ishly bad. Honestly, I don't say this very often. In fact, I don't think I've ever said this. I don't think I've ever even thought this. But I was pretty damn close to just tapping out on this one. Tapping out on a Charger-Raider game. Turning it off before it was over. Normally when I see overtime, I tweet free football because I'm hyped. Here, I was pissed. Free football? They could have paid me to watch overtime, and I still didn't want anything to do with it. In fact, they do pay me to watch it, which is the only reason I did watch overtime. Because despite all the bullcrap that fills the channel guide these days, almost any of that bullcrap was better than this bullcrap. Last thing I needed was another hour of that bullcrap, only to see neither team want to win or score and have that horrible game end in a tie. It was going to go that way, right? So finally, overtime, Raiders go on another monster drive. And again, there was no way that game was going to end any other way but horribly for the Chargers. The Raiders were going to score a TD and end it, except they didn't. The Chargers bowed the hell up. They hold them to a field goal. They get the ball back. But even then, LA gets the ball. I doubt there are any Charger fans who are feeling it. And then Justin Herbert did this.
Herbert takes the shotgun snap. He's back to pass. Herbert looking left, has plenty of time. Going deep left side. Guyton wide open. Makes the catch at the 10. Across the 5, and he's down at the 2. Shaylen Guyton was all by himself. It'll be first and goal Chargers from the Raiders 2-yard line.
Dang.
Unbelievable. Unbelievable.
That was impressive. In overtime, in a clutch situation, this guy just lets it rip like that. My immediate reaction upon seeing that was, man, this kid is amazing. This kid is special. The Chargers have a real one right there. And it seemed for a moment like maybe LA was going to win it. Maybe they could rip it. And then the insanity.
And the ball's out. Recovered by the Chargers and Gabe Neighbors. And officials are all looking at each other. Herbert's on his back, and the officials have yet to make a call. Here it is.
By rule, inside of 2 minutes, only the fumbler can advance a loose ball. As a result, we're going to bring the ball back to the spot of the fumble. It will be third down. We will wind the clock up. I'm ready.
I'm sorry. That's just funny. I mean, holy crap. They were that close to losing the ball and losing the game. And you know the moment he lost control of the ball, Charger fan was losing his mind, because to lose that game that way would have been the most Charger thing ever. Except they didn't lose the ball or the game because Herbert decided to try once again.
Here's the snap. Herbert diving again, and he is in. Touchdown, Chargers. Justin Herbert dives into the end zone, and the Chargers have won the game on a one-yard touchdown run.
Ball game. Chargers win. Chargers win. Show me your lightning bolt. That was their first win over an AFC Western opponent in nearly 2 years. It's an insane thing to say, but it's true. And I don't want to go too far with this, but maybe possibly that's the game where things start to turn. Because the old Chargers would have lost that game. The old Chargers would have found multiple ways to lose that game. But last night, they came about as close as they could to losing it and somehow found a way to win it. They're 5-9. That's not where they want to be. That's not where they hope to be this year. But man, they've got something. And that's not hype. I mean, that's not speculation. That's a fact. They have something in Justin Herbert. The kid is special. He is really, really good. As good as you thought he was, he's even better than that. I mean, he's special. He's going to end the season throwing for somewhere in the neighborhood of 4,500 yards. A rookie record, 30-plus TD passes. But you know, it's even more than that. It's more than the arm, quote, it's more than the arm talent. It's more than the arm. It's more than the legs. It's the composure. It's the poise. It's his head. He's got that it. I don't know how to describe it. I just know it when I see it. And when you know, you know. And I know this guy's got it. He's got a hell of a lot of it. And it's the kind of thing that gets you wins when you're expecting losses. That's what it can do for you. It can get you wins when you're expecting losses. The kind of thing that turns a likely loss into a nice win. And then you start to stack them. And then good things start to happen. No, LA's not going to make the playoffs this year. But next year, when Herbert's got a full season under his belt and a full offseason to prepare, look the hell out. Because it is turning. And it is changing. And it's happening because this kid is amazing.
Unbelievable. Unbelievable.
That's fair. This kid is amazing. He is the real one. 1-800-636-8686. And how about the Raiders? If he is the real one, they are really whack. Had to have it. Had to have that game to keep any shot of making it to the postseason alive. They're at home. They're going up against an arch rival who had not won a game in division in 2 years, and they find a way to tank. Man, you know it's going to be a bad thing, right? When Chunk rolled out wearing an Oakland Raider hat. That was not a good omen. Pretty Jack Wagon-y moment last night when John Gruden rolled out wearing an Oakland Raider hat. All right, so I've got the Raider side of things coming up a little bit later on. Other topics. Clippers guard Kawhi Leonard made an appearance with Jimmy Kimmel. It was gold. It went every bit as well as you might expect it to go. I've got that for you coming up, too. It's a Friday, so you know we'll go off the board. Big head bets. That's not off the board. He's got a big head. But man, his percentage of wins against the spread is pretty amazing. So we're going to do that in hour number three. 1-800-636-8686. Hate to bring this guy into it, but Stapp is at it again, doing Stappish things. Somebody literally thought it was a good idea to cast Stapp as Sinatra in a movie. Is that not the worst idea ever? You're going to take one of the biggest bags ever and let him play one of the coolest dudes ever? Who thought of that? Who thought that would work? That guy is going to play Frank Sinatra in a movie. If even for only one scene. Are you kidding me about that? That topic coming up a little bit later on, too. Before I go to break, let me hit you with some reaction. Hey, Rome. Last night's game featured two of the worst coaches in the NFL. It was one bad decision after another. Frankly, it was embarrassing, and it shouldn't be shown on TV. Signed Thursdays when Ritt is on the board. Signed Chris, no longer in St. Pete. Wore Anthony Lynn, flipping a coin before each play. Wore me telling my coworkers, see you next year after today. Chris, there literally is nothing funny or good about that. There's not a single line in that that's good or funny. Hey, clones. Some of you seem to be of the opinion that this is my last day of the year, not of the show or of life, but just of the year, that this is my last day, that obviously Rome's going to bounce on the 18th. You know, Rome's going to naturally get a 2-week vacation for Christmas. And you know what? You're right. You'll be lucky if I even stay through the end of this show. Just kidding. No, man, I'm here next week. I'm here next week. Just understand this. How do you expect me to get 6 weeks of vacation a year if I don't get them in? I got to get them in at some point. And to the question of, hey, Rome, why do you take so much vacation? Because I get so much vacation. No, I'm going to work through Thursday of next week. So if you think that I'm going to bounce and that today is the year. Did I say anything about a year in review? Come on, you know the show ends on the year in review. I just did this whole long-form rant about what happened last night. If this were my last day of the year, we would have started with the year in review. Come on, man, do better. Be better. Use common sense. No, my last day of the year on this show will be next Thursday. So I'm here for you. At Hitman Canadian tweets, that game looked familiar. Signed Todd Gurley, fishing for his phone. At Yellow Weasel tweets, please don't let Parody Larry on air today to do a Christmas parody. Just reset the 12 days of IRAY so I can hear that angelic voice of Kim in SAC again. War IRAY and his pee-soaked cardigans. Wonder if he gets them from the same thrift shop that Hawk shops at. I don't know, Alvin. I was going to ask you if you have that, Alvin, but of course you were not here yesterday, so you probably don't have that, do you?
The 12th day of Christmas IRAY gave to me 12 lunks flaming, 11 rats a-roasting.
Can you stop that for one second, Alvin? Thank you. Good job, Alvin. Just really quickly, a little background. This was Kim in Sacramento who told Adam Hawk that she was a frontline worker. I said, oh, she's a frontline worker. Great, she can cut the line. And I said, Kim, thank you so much. Thank you so much for everything you've done. I want to thank every frontline worker for everything they've done, for risking your life to save other lives, and on and on and on. And she said, well, no, I want to thank you, Jim. And I'm going to thank you by singing a song. She thanked me by doing a bum song about IRAY. Continue.
12 lungs exclaiming, 11 rats are roasting, 10 pigeons pecking, 9 bras are narking, 8 beers a-chugging, 7 dumpsters burning, 6 roaches squirming, 5 pee-soaked cardigans, 4 cardboard houses, 3 shopping carts, 2 moldy eggs, and an incurable case of Hep C.
And an incurable case of Hep C. War Lady Clones. From the front lines, no less. Bum smack. Written to the 12 days of Christmas. All right, then. 1-800-636-8686. Get up in here. Let's do this. So, quick question, though. Why is Old Trapper Beef Jerky so awesome? Well, there is something to be said for a family business that stands by quality and produces the world's finest beef jerky. Do not be fooled by other brands. All beef jerky is not the same. Make sure you choose Old Trapper. You can actually see the quality right through their iconic Clearview packages. Every single bite of Old Trapper is tender. It's never tough because they only use the finest ingredients. From their lean strips of beef, seasoned with top quality spices, to the real wood-fired smoke. Old Trapper delivers quality in every single bite. And Old Trapper jerky comes in four amazing flavors. You've got Old Fashioned, you have Teriyaki, you have Peppered, and you have Hot and Spicy. All chock full of good protein to satisfy your manliest hunger cravings and to provide real, sustained energy. Old Trapper is just a better way to snack. Make Old Trapper part of your weekly grocery list. Make sure to keep a good supply on hand for you and your family both. If you do not see it, ask for Old Trapper by name, because no other jerky compares. Old Trapper, what is your beef?
You're listening to the Jim Rome Show.
Bumping in, looking at some of the holiday cards on CBS Sports Network. Looking good. Looking good. I like it. I'm glad that you participated. So I say Friday, you say what? I say Friday, you say happy hour, tequila. No, man, you say ATP. Ask the Pros, brought to you by O'Reilly Auto Parts. So what you want to do is, if you want to ask me something, make sure you go to cbssportsradio.com/askthepros. Don't do it on Twitter. Don't do it on email. Don't do it on the phones. You have to go to that address. Think O'Reilly Auto Parts for all of your car care needs. Get guaranteed low prices. Excellent customer service at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Better parts, better prices every day. Once again, Kawhi Leonard did a sit-down, a Zoom call with Jimmy Kimmel, and it was every bit as good as you'd expect. I'll have that for you. I do want to reset before the weekend the conversation I had with Clinton Portis, because I'm hyped on that. That was really, really good. It's almost impossible not to have a really good conversation with somebody who played at and attended the U back in the day. My guy CP, right in the middle of the whole thing. And yes, clones, he did, if I'm not mistaken, share a running back room with Najee Davenport. And no, clones, we did not get into that. Do you know why? I had had more than enough of that type of thing between Lamar Jackson and Todd Gurley. And all of you clones. Now, I did ask Clinton Portis about Lamar Jackson, just not Najee. So don't come to me and say, hey, Rome, how do you have CP on and not ask him about Najee? You know how? I just didn't ask him. Hey, Rome, how in the hell do you talk to Clinton Portis and not ask him about Najee Davenport? You know how? I just didn't. Was not that hard. Dear Van Smack, if the Jungle Urine Review is Thursday, is the Silk Bra Urine Review on Wednesday? Hell of a lot to cover this year. Happy holidays to you and the XR4TI. Signed, Ray Near Y-Town. It is the year of the bra. It is the year of the narc. So if I have a year in review, is it not a two-day event? Doesn't Silk get his own day? Good point. Hey, Rome. War Brett Michaels as Dean Martin. Well done, Chad. Well done. Chad in Orlando. If they're going to cast Stapp as Sinatra, you may as well cast Brett Michaels as Dean Martin. Why the hell not? Even that's not as bad as the other. Rome Slice. That game was an absolute nail biter. It made me really nervous. Regards, watching the toilet slowly overflow at your in-law's house. Signed, Geoff in Lincoln. Ward Justin Herbert finishing that game and then heading over to the local Cineplex to tear tickets. Like I said, special, special player. The real one. Guy's going to be amazing. He's had one of the best rookie years ever. Ever. All right, I would say in market on topic, but he's not in market because the Raiders are now in Vegas. But he is on topic. Let's go to Santa Clara quickly. David, what's going on, David? How are you?
Romy.
David.
My
David.
Brother, dude. Long-time listener, dude. First-time caller. I was with you at the tour stop in Oakland. Very embarrassed to be there. Dude, that place sucked.
By the way, dude, Raiders, you're so right. It did suck, and I was embarrassed to be there, and I am me. That was the only tour stop that didn't work, other than the riot at Universal City. But you're right. I'm glad you were there. I'm glad we have that to share.
Bro, you stole all of my takes, but I'm not going to go back to then. Raiders right now, we're not even a good team, so we're not even talking about the Raiders, okay? We suck.
My man. All right, Dave, let me jump in there. I appreciate it, I think so what you're telling me is you called up and you had nothing to say because I ripped all of your takes in the open. Is that what you're telling me? And that you wanted to tell me that you went to the ill-fated Oakland tour stop and that it sucked and that you were embarrassed. My man. First of all, rack him, Alvin. Rack my guy, David. Good job, David. Good looking out. You're right. The Oakland tour stop was an embarrassment. And I knew it would be. And I didn't want to go. But at the time, there were certain suits and certain sponsors and certain radio executives saying, oh, no, you're coming. You're coming. I said, listen, I don't want to flex on anybody. And I know that ultimately it's not my decision. And I'm a member of a team, right? But I'm here to tell you, as the quarterback of the team, this is a bad idea. I'm just not feeling it. I don't feel the energy for it. And I'm not one of those like big, huge energy guys, but I know the jungle. I know the audience. I know where a tour stop is going to kill, and I know where it maybe might not kill. And I knew that was not the best idea. And then I went there, and it turned out that not only was it not the best idea, it was pretty much the worst idea. And it didn't help that you had locals on the local affiliate saying, oh, no, you don't want to go there. Don't go there. Don't go there. You can't get in. Oh, awesome. Thanks for having my back. So it went about as badly as you'd expect. That guy just said it. I was there, Rome. I was embarrassed. Hey, David, I was there too, and I was embarrassed. And I'm me. I'm the one hosting it. In fact, more embarrassed than even the Universal City tour stop. I wasn't embarrassed by that. I was just afraid of that. That was someday. Yeah, I want to hear from somebody who went to that event. Why don't we throw it back? Why don't we, quote, flashback on this Friday to anybody in attendance at that event? You know, the one that lasted 4 minutes on the air before we shut it down and told the guests that we're en route to turn around and come back or go back to wherever they started? All right, let's take a timeout. When we return, we're talking BYU football. Kalani Sitake is my guest. Malcolm Butler next hour. James Kelly. Going to tell you who he's betting on this weekend. Coming up in hour number three. My man David in Santa Clara. One call, one rack job. It's a very bitter Raider fan. And another thing. Time for a sports update. Here it is.
Live from Southern California, this is the Jim Rome Show on CBS Sports Radio.
Welcome back. I'm Jim Rome. Very good Friday to you. Great to have you here. Something I like to do on this show, talk BYU football. We do it quite a bit. They are having a tremendous season. We are joined right now by the head coach at BYU. He is in his fifth season as Cougars head coach. He is leading BYU to its fourth bowl game in 5 years. He was named to the Bear Bryant Coach of the Year Award watch list. BYU is 10-1 on the year. They are number 14 in the AP poll, and they are taking on UCF in the Boca Raton Bowl. That is December 22nd, 7 p.m. Eastern time. Kalani Sitake is my guest. Kalani, it's good to have you back. How are you?
Doing great. Thanks for having me on, Jim.
Always good to have you on, Coach. All right, so you beat San Diego State on Saturday. Let me start right there. You fell behind 14-7 in the first quarter, and then you shut them down the rest of the way. You win that game 28-14. How happy were you with the way the defense buckled down and kept the Aztecs from scoring in the final three quarters and the way that unit showed up?
Well, I was really pleased with the guys. I mean, they played hard, and I think looking at the game plan that San Diego State had, I mean, that's how they play. They lean on their defense to win games and try to control the clock and run that power run game that Brady Hoke does a great job at informing there at San Diego State. And our guys kept plugging away. You know, we knew that it was going to be a tough game, and And I'm just glad that we were able to put our guys in a position to get the victory and send our seniors out the right way at home.
You know, it's been such an unusual season, and we can get into that. But the fact of the matter is that win brings you to 10 on the season, which is the most for BYU since 2011. I understand that you're looking to add another one next week, but what does the number 10 represent and mean to you?
Oh, just in the crazy year where our schedule has been, turned upside down, and our administration had to go to work. Tom Holmer, our athletic director, did a great job at getting us as many games as possible. And the one thing that I've been really, really pleased with in getting the 10th win was just the things I saw from our players, their willingness to play, make sacrifices, try to find ways to keep themselves safe and then to test in the right way. You know, we've had to make a lot of adjustments. Every team has had to do that in college football. But, it tested our depth and tested our unity as a team, and then it was nice to see these guys appreciate the game and appreciate each other and take the field with love.
We're talking BYU football. Head coach Kalani Sitake is my guest. You know, you and I spoke back in May when there were so many questions about whether or not there would be a season, and if there was, what that might look like. Fact is, you were the only program in the West that was committed to play back in August. I know that you weren't going to put anybody at risk, but how much pride is there in the fact that you and the coaching staff and the entire athletic department had a vision and worked as hard as you did to successfully fulfill it?
Well, I'm really thankful for all the people that allowed that to happen. And I think, you know, being able to feel things out and kind of and not be so cautious. But we were careful, but we knew what these guys were about. We felt like the safest thing for our players and our athletes were to put them here, bring them here and be in a controlled environment and educate them on the health and the health risks and the ways to be safe, and then having them here on campus and starting June 1st, I think was a huge positive for our players. But more than anything, they're you're looking at their mentality, and these are young men that are in college, and they love the game of football. And so, if you can kind of keep that around football and keep the team together, they motivate each other, and they find ways to intrinsically motivate themselves to be at their best, and it carries over. And I'm glad that we kept that spirit of optimism and positivity, and that it worked out.
Yeah, I want to ask you about the kids, because the student athletes, you know what you're getting when you recruit the type of athlete that you recruit, and you know they're going to be resilient, you know they're going to be focused, you know they care about each other, you know they want it very badly, but nobody's ever gone through anything like this before. Did you learn anything about this particular group and the way they handled themselves and the way they went about their work?
Definitely. I mean, you mentioned it before that recruiting to this school, that's a the lifestyle, it's difficult, it's hard, and that's what we lean on, that this is going to be, it's not just like your typical college experience. You're going to have live the honor code, a different lifestyle than a lot of other colleges. The academics is very difficult and rigorous, and you're going to have to buckle down and study hard and stay on top of it. And then football's tough too. You know, we expect them to be physically tough on the field and mentally tough. All that put together sometimes isn't the best selling point for a lot of recruits, but for us, it's okay. We feel like we filter a lot of guys out, and we get guys that appreciate the game, and it's an honor for me to be their coach. And I see these guys, the one thing I saw is that I could trust them, you know, and that when we were stuck in quarantine and stuck in, away from each other, I saw guys come back in June 1st with changing their bodies already. And that's with a limited opportunities to work out and things like that with their trainers. And when they showed up in June 1st, we already had a good group of young men that increased their foundation of health and were able to build on that. And then we went with our strength conditioning program from June 1st on. I saw these guys get even better. And so to me, that's been a really bright side of the whole pandemic. And for me, it's being able to trust them. And this program is going to be run by the players' involvement and having their feedback. And I think it's really important for me to do that as a leader.
Kalani Sitake joining us. That had to fire you up. You had to be so proud and so impressed that they showed up that way. They took that kind of initiative. They got the work done, and they were ready to play, and they were ready to compete. Yeah, I would say the most impressive move, though, of the entire season for me is when you and Coastal Carolina agreed to play in that game, and you went to their place, and you just battled. It would have been so much easier to say, you know what? We're undefeated. We're going to stay like this. We're good, and not take something like that on and risk an undefeated season. Why were you so willing to assume that risk?
Well, when I got the job here, I saw the schedule, and a lot of people were saying, well, have you seen the future schedules there from 2016 on? and it got me fired up. I played here under Lavelle Edwards, and I would love to have these schedules to play all these P5 teams, and that was a huge motivation for me. And that's how we recruited guys that love that and love the game of football. So, you know, for me, it's like you fortune favors the bold. You go after things, and even if it looks like it's a tough task, I mean, that's how you learn. You learn through adversity, and it was rough. We came a yard short from winning that game, and credit to Coastal Carolina, they were able to get the win. But it was an experience that, I mean, everybody likes to win, but I think for us, we're going to learn a lot from adversity, and sometimes success isn't the best teacher. You know, we have to learn from other methods, and I'm really proud of the way the boys respond back from that game and from that loss. Man, it drew our team closer. We're in the locker room, and it was a tough, tough loss. And I saw a team come together and love each other more. And now take the field, you know, against San Diego State, and take the field against, a very talented UCF team in the Boca Raton Bowl. And I see guys that aren't going to take things for granted and aren't going to be afraid to be bold. And I mean, that's why we all outkick our coverages when people say, "Oh wow, that's your wife." You know what I mean? Because you go after what people think is impossible, and for us, it's okay to be bold and go after things.
What an awesome response! Fortune favors the bold. Kalani Sitake is joining us. I love that answer. All right, so what about Zach Wilson? And I do want to ask you about UCF in a minute, but I want to ask you about Zach. He's thrown for nearly 3,300 yards, 30 touchdowns, only three INTs. On top of those numbers, he's completing more than 73% of his passes, which is a major uptick over last year. How would you describe the season that he's having?
Well, I think he's been, you know, he had a great offseason, and you know, since his freshman year, he's been battling with a few injuries here and there. But I also think this the maturity and the growth that has happened. When you have a young man that has great work ethic, the sky's the limit for him. And we knew he had this potential. We have a lot of players with great potential, and it just takes some. Sometimes it's just a matter of time, and sometimes it's just a matter of opportunity. And so, seeing him flourish in the way that he's doing right now, I'm so proud of him, and I'm really proud of the way that he's leading this team. And I'm just like I'm proud of the rest of the group. I mean, we have a lot of guys that are in a lot of, getting recognition for a lot of different things, and that's due to the it's credit. They can give credit and it's a compliment to their hard work their basically their passionate effort in trying to get things better.
I'm really, really impressed with him. Impressed watching him. Impressed when I've had him on the program and talking to him. Like, he's got this confidence, but it's not like an arrogance, and it's infectious. I would imagine it's got a really good impact and effect on those around him. Let me ask you about UCF. Now, you get ready for them on Tuesday. At this point in the process, what are your thoughts on UCF, and what are the areas you're really focusing in on?
Great team, great coach. I mean, I think Josh Heupel is a great coach, and the way that he gets those guys ready to play, this is just a talent all over the place, and an explosive team in all three phases, and well coached. And so, I think they have a quarterback that can spin the ball and is very athletic and has a strong arm. I mean, I've seen him since he was in high school, and when he was in Hawaii. So, we know it's a tough task, really good team, well coached, and looking forward to the matchup. I think this is going to test us, and we're looking forward to seeing how we can perform. And I think if we perform at our best, we can live with whatever the result will be. But I'm really excited about this matchup and really honored to be on that field against UCF.
That is December 22nd. BYU is number 14 in the AP poll. They're 10-1 on the year. Before you go, we talked about the quality of student-athlete that you're looking for. I'm curious, early signing day was Wednesday, and you're always going to be looking for players who represent BYU and the honor code. But at the same time, when you've had the success that you've had there, do you find that more and more players than maybe ever before are now interested in BYU?
Definitely. I mean, I think the people are starting to see the style of football that we play, and they look at the brand that we have, and I think it's it opens up some doors and maybe gets our net a little bit wider, hopefully we can get some young people that are struggling with the grades to increase, get their GPAs up so we can get them into school. And the key for us is just getting that communication and letting them know more about BYU. I mean, they look at our alumni and the people that have played here. I don't think a lot of the recruits, I mean, they're young, but, to start hearing about the names and the players that are in the NFL currently that played here and then the ones that have played in the past, I think it's an impressive list. And it just gets the conversation going. And as we start going through it, we're going to ask them to we're asking to make some sacrifices if they come here, but all the sacrifices that are made are all centered around being a better ball player, and we feel like if you come here for 4 to 5 years and do that, you know, it's going to filter it out a lot of things that are going to be important to you, and you're going to be able to perform at your best and see what happens. And for the most part, you see the success that our guys are having. It's not just limited to the football field. It's all over the place. They're doing great things in their professions right now as alumni, and they're making major contributions to the community. I'm really, really proud of those guys.
Kalani Sitake's the head football coach at BYU in his fifth season. Once again, that game is coming up on December 22nd, 7 p.m., the Boca Raton Bowl, BYU and UCF. Kalani, great to have you back on. You guys have had an amazing year. I know you got one more left. Good luck with that, and I appreciate you coming on as always.
Thanks for having me on. Happy holidays, everyone.
Happy holidays, Coach. Kalani Sitake's a good one. And BYU is having a great, great year. Once again, 10-1, number 14 in the AP poll, and they're going to play their bowl game. As mentioned, they were the only program in the West that was really committed to playing a full schedule back in August. They went after it. They made that happen. And I can't stress this enough. I talked about it when it happened, and we touched on it briefly. But the fact that BYU and Coastal Carolina took that on and did so in short notice, I thought that was amazing. That was one of the highlights of the year. But as he points out, fortune favors the bold. The Raiders had a lot of trouble getting off the field when they had to last night, didn't they? Had to have that game. Remember when, and I'll break this down, remember when Vegas was 6-3? Remember when they beat Kansas City and they took that victory lap around Arrowhead? Remember when it was mandated that, man, everybody owes the Raiders and Chunk an apology? Look at them. Derek Carr looking like MVP Derek Carr. Chunk looking like he is the guy to bring them back. And it was all about the Raiders. Like, damn, look at these guys. Yeah, now look at them. Back at 500, losing a game they had to have to a divisional rival and having it happen at home. And the coach shows up wearing the wrong hat. It's a bad look, Chunk. There's hour number one. When we return, Malcolm Butler next hour. The big head, James Kelly, in hour number three. And your telephone call is on next.